Let's get started. Welcome everyone to the work session for the City Council meeting of August 15th, 2023. Our first item is a presentation discussion of the wellness survey that was conducted for our city. And I'll turn this over to Elisa. And Elisa, would you introduce?
Yes.
And any of our wellness committee that's here as well.
Yes, thank you. So we're delighted to have Dr. Courtney Flint from Utah State University, who chairs this Healthy Initiatives Project at Utah State. I'm sure she'll tell us more about that. She and I met last year at the ULCT conference in October, and I chased her down after her presentation and said, how can I get this in North Salt Lake? And she's been very accommodating to push it through. Quicker than it does in a lot of other cities to get finished. So we have this first round of data that is really powerful. And I know we've done a preview in City Council, and we've done a preview in the Health and Wellness Committee. Can I have the Health and Wellness Committee members that are here stand up? Thank you for coming. So this is the committee within the city that is charged with health and wellness, which is such a broad scope in topic that data from this type of research is really meaningful as we try to create actionable programs in our city. So Dr. Flint, I'm sure we'll introduce her graduate student as well, who is a North Salt Lake resident, and happy to have you here as well. So thank you.
Let's push this. So. Thank you so much for having me. Again, I'm Dr. Courtney Flint from Utah State University. I'm here with Emma Epperson, who's a graduate student in our program. It's great to be with you tonight. Thanks for having me. All right. Well, let's dive in this. I'm really so pleased to bring back your data to share with you and discuss with you a little bit and see where we can go from here. Let's just see how we're going to make this go forward. Any ideas? Clicking to the right. There we go. All right. So I direct something called the Utah Wellbeing Project, in which we conduct the Utah Wellbeing Survey. And so this year we have conducted this survey with you and with South Weber City. We weren't going to do surveys this year, but we had a very compelling argument. And so we were really pleased to be able to get this in there this year in between surveys. So we have been doing surveys all over the state back to 2018, really. And this map that you see here shows all of the different communities that have participated since we started, which is 48 communities. We had 35 in 2022, then plus the two of you, so which we kind of lump you in together a little bit. And our overall goals for this project are first and foremost to help provide city leaders such as yourselves with up-to-date information, timely data on the well-being and other local perspectives of your residents to help you inform your planning processes, your general decision-making, and just generally to help you be one of many other venues you have to help you keep a finger on the pulse of your residents. We know you have many ways to collect data, and we would like to offer this as part of that mix. We also do research on comparative well-being at the community level. And increasingly, we're bridging our efforts with state and regional efforts. We are working with the Utah Department of Transportation. They have a healthy transportation initiative. We're working closely with them. We're working with the Department of Health, both of them thinking about the new Healthy Places Index and how do the data compare. We're working with Get Healthy Utah. They have now designated our survey as one of a number of ways that you can use data, you can gather data as part of your criteria for being one of the healthy communities that's designated. So we're trying to help support communities in that way. We're working with the Huntsman Cancer Institute that is looking at some of the sort of more social and perceptual and environmental determinants of health. And so we're partnering with them as well. And the regional and county health departments and so forth. So we are expanding our interactions very broadly. The reports are all online. We put every city's report on there for the public and everybody to see. Yours is right up there in the 2023 surveys, and so you can take a look at that. So what did we do? Well, we did a Qualtrics survey, so it's an online survey. We worked in partnership with you as a city at no cost to you to do this survey. How we got that done, the partnerships is essential. We can design a survey, we can analyze it, we can report it, But in order to get people to respond, we feel that the cities know how to reach, you know how to reach your residents best. And so we like to partner so that you guys take care of the advertising and the recruitment. In the first year, it's always a little bit like, how does this work? What is this? And so I thought you did very well to get the 299 surveys that were completed enough to be included in the analysis. Who did we hear from? We like to be very transparent about who we're hearing from and who we're not hearing from. Any online survey is going to have a biased sort of response to some degree, so we just like to be really transparent. 99% of your respondents were full-time residents. The average length of residence was 14 years, but that spanned everywhere from a couple of months to, I think, somewhere in the 80s. So there were certainly respondents who'd been around a while. 23% had lived in North Salt Lake for five or fewer years. So we are getting some of those newer residents as well as plenty of the longtime residents. The survey underrepresents males. Women are always more likely to do an online survey, and that's the way it goes. Those without a college degree, those who are not married, those who are Hispanic or Latino, those who are non-white, those who rent, those that have that lower tier of incomes, and those in the ages of 18 to 29, we have a harder time reaching them in the representative levels that they exist within the city according to the census. In addition to that, you guys asked us to ask a locational, sort of a geographic question. So we had, you know, which part of North Salt Lake do you live in? And this is kind of how that manifested itself on the map when we took the directions that you gave the respondents. And so just under half came from this eastern portion, 14% from that midtown between Orchard Drive and Highway 89, I believe, and then to the west, 37%. If we get right into the data, we can see that North Salt Lake is above average when you compare to all cities, as well as just those cities that are in that caucus group that the Utah League of Cities and Towns establishes. You guys are in there with the established mid-sized cities. We combine those with the cities of the first and second class to be our more urban group of cities. And so North Salt Lake is above average there. And so 81% saying that their well-being is a 4 or a 5 on a 5-point scale, that's just really great. Really high responses there on terms of overall personal well-being. If you look at the geography there, the East folks had higher well-being, well higher than that average, and then followed by the West folks, and then Midtown was a little bit lower. If we look at community well-being, how well is the community doing in general? Always those scores come down a little bit. Our respondents tend to feel that their personal well-being is higher than their city's well-being, and so that's not unusual for that to shift downward a little bit. And so you come right in there, very close to the average overall, but then you can see the differences. The East does come out statistically higher at 3.75 on a 5-point scale than both the West and the Midtown have the same average response. All right, we don't just ask about general things like overall personal well-being, which we internally define as everything that goes into making a good life. It's very inclusive. The concept goes back to Aristotle and the ancient Greeks. And so we're very open and inclusive about that. But every person is going to have their own bundle of things that are really important to their well-being. And so we try not to define it too narrowly so that we box people out. So we have this general terms, but then we break it down into these 10 different categories, or what we call domains of well-being. And that fits with a lot of literature and a lot of national and international initiatives to survey on well-being. And so you can see here that in the little box on the lower left, all of those domains are rated highly important and highly, they're rated high and they're high in importance. But when we tease them out, we can get a little bit of variation. So we can see that the highest rated domains are things like living standards, safety and security, education, and mental health. We can see that the most important domains are also safety and security, mental health, physical health, and then a little bit lower, but still high, living standards, education, and local environmental quality. The one thing that does pop up here in what we call the red zone, and these are things that are rated very important to folks, but they're a little lower than the average of all of the domains. And local environmental quality fits right in there. And that's not an uncommon response in the Wasatch Front communities. And we don't know what is behind that from these data, but we do get some indications in the open comments, and they do shed some light on what people are thinking about. We'll talk about those in a little bit. All right, so there are some demographic, you probably know what the answer to that question is. There are some complex demographic variations. We don't have time tonight to get into all of the details, but I can tell you that when we look within your community at the variations, we see lower well-being scores for those in those middle-aged brackets, the 40 to 59, those with a college degree, those who have lived here 5 years or less or fewer, and those with the lower in the lower income brackets. There are also important influences on the various domains that cut across other categories, and there's a lot more in the report that you can look to for the details. It's really quite an intricate little table to show you where those findings are.
Can I ask a quick question
on
that?
Of course.
Is it unusual to have those with a college degree report a lower personal well-being score? Are we unusual in that?
A little bit, yes. Not like I've never seen it before, but it is more uncommon. Usually it is the other way around, but mixed. Yeah, a little bit different. So we are also asking about community action. To what degree do people take action in North Salt Lake in response to local problems and opportunities? And you get a really almost perfect bell-shaped curve here. 33% said a 4 or a 5, which puts you above some of the other urban and urbanizing rapidly places, but perhaps in that lower third of all of the cities. The rural places, they tend to top the charts here on terms of those taking action kinds of things. Likewise with community connection. So we see that same sort of bell-shaped curve. How connected do people feel to North Salt Lake as a community? 31% said a 4 or a 5. Well, this has turned out to be a highly influential variable. For North Salt Lake here on the top, you can see that those that have those highest levels of community, feelings of community connection, also have the highest levels of overall personal well-being. We know, and I don't have the graph for you because we've just been working on the data now, but there are also strong correlations with mental health, that the higher the community connection, the higher those sort of ratings of people's mental health. This was the finding earlier in 2022 data that said we shouldn't just present the data, we should present also some resources. So what do we do about this for cities? So we have developed this well-being resources component of our website. We have we've pulled together resources on community connection, but also with some of these other areas where we have decided not to bring you a bunch of academic articles about these things that are published in scholarly journals, but to give you resources that are really targeted predominantly for cities that give you some tools and tricks that you can use to help enhance some of these areas of well-being should they be important to you to focus on. So there's a lot there on the website for you to ponder. So we also, this past year, asked about participation in recreation and nature-based activities. You can see in North Salt Lake that you've got a very active citizenry here in North Salt Lake, enjoying the wildlife and birds, recreating in the parks, but also getting out of town and doing that non-motorized recreation on public lands or waters. Gardening, we drove around for a little bit, lots of people out in their gardens, seems very important to folks. Interestingly enough, these kinds of activities were also very influential. You can see what they're highly correlated with. So many of these activities are correlated with higher levels of personal well-being, some with community well-being, and also with those feelings of community connection. So even the people who are participating in city recreation programs who responded to the survey had higher levels of community connection as well as their general well-being. So those were pretty striking findings and even more strong correlations for North Salt Lake than we often see in other similar sized communities. We have asked folks for years about the landscape. What role do these landscape features play in your well-being? And it's a really boring question because everybody loves their natural landscapes, mountains, rivers, even city parks, trails, lakes. I don't know if we'll continue to ask this question because we always get the same response. It's very important to folks here. But as you get into the more developed landscapes and those with industry, we start to see a different picture. Usually we get more of a mixed response, and you have that mixed response very much on the residential and commercial development. Where you are somewhat different is in the industry, and a lot of times we get a real mixed response there. Your response is pretty strikingly negative on the feelings of how the industry relates to their well-being. We have asked about population growth. How would you describe the rate of population growth in North Salt Lake? You've got 57% saying it's too fast, but 32% say it's just right. So there's a mix here as well. In terms of economic development, how would you describe that pace of economic development? And you get a little more of a balanced response, but still with 40% saying it's just right. That's your biggest group, and 28% saying too fast. In terms of your population growth, you are growing at roughly around a 33% increase. You probably have the more precise figure. This is the 10 to 20 rate that I have. And so you're not in the highest, fastest growing communities, but still faster than many others in the Wasatch Front. So there's some correlation there with some of those rapid growth rates and people's responses to that. We also ask about a series of possible concerns that folks might have. A lot of this list grew from the cities themselves that we've partnered with over the last years that have added things to our concerns list. And so this is the list that we've been asking for a couple of years now. And you can see your top three up there. Air quality tops to the list at 92% with a moderate or major concern, most of those having a major concern. And then water supply, also very high, and affordable housing. And you're not unique in these three. Those are often the top three all the way up and down the Wasatch Front. You are unique by having climate change at 71%. I will say that is substantially higher than we see on average in Utah. I think it's about a 50%. So that's an interesting result for North Salt Lake, and maybe it relates to who answered the survey, but it's something we just wanted to be transparent about there. Roads and transportation also very important and high concerns across along the Wasatch Front too as well. All right, when we ask people some open-ended questions, what do you value most about living and working in North Salt Lake? People talk about the location. They like that proximity to the big city. They like the amenities you have here and the social climate. There's a lot of comments. This is a nice place to raise a family. This is a friendly community, and so we certainly see those. We also ask questions, just is there anything else you'd like to tell us in addition about well-being in North Salt Lake? And we got a lot of comments. The majority of those comments related to issues of government, environmental quality, and that goes with that red zone that we found. Lots of talk about dust, so I will say that that comes up pretty strikingly in the comments. And green space and the importance of green space, what's happening with green space, growth and development, and housing. There are a considerable few comments about mosquitoes, about safety, some social climate kinds of questions, and these can be positive or negative. They're not always negative. In fact, these additional comments sometimes are really people who are really proud of their city, and so forth. So that's the summary of the data that I have for you tonight. So our next, but a couple comments about where we go from here. Most, like I said, most of the bulk of the survey cities did the surveys in early 2022. They're all getting ready to do a survey in 2024. You all have to decide what's the right interval for you in North Salt Lake. We're going to probably begin to do these on a every 2 year basis. It gives us more time to analyze and report the data for you, but it also helps us to avoid survey fatigue, which is a very real thing. So I'd like you to all be really mindful of that. I do think that there's an opportunity next time we do surveys. What I'd like to do is partner with some of the cities that actually have what we call a sampling frame, or a way to actually sample from your residents and get more of a proportionate sample across your community and your demographics. We can be a little more scientific about representativeness and so forth. And that may be something that you can consider if you'd like to consider. If you want to move forward with the survey, we could get a more representative sample. And then we could also open that up to the community at large And that way we can learn, does it make a difference when you allow anybody to take a survey or you target an actually sampled population? I want to do that kind of comparison because I want to let cities know about the different approaches to surveying and which is going to give you the most representative responses. So that's an option. So 2024, I'm not quite sure when in 2024 we will be doing the surveys. I'm awaiting some funding decisions and at a number of levels across the board. We've been doing this survey on about $15,000 a year for the last few years. And thankful to so many students who worked with the project and worked with the data, but we can't do that for 30, 40, 50 cities, which is what we're anticipating moving forward. So we're doing some fundraising now, conversations at a variety of levels, and so that may affect our timing next year, but we will do surveys in 2024, and I'd love to have you continue to be a partner in the project. And apologies for being a bit long-winded, just wanted to share your data back with you, and I'm happy to answer a couple questions if you have them.
Thank you for this survey, and go Aggies. Okay. And the other thing I wanted, I was striking on one of those pages, which I found interesting, was a community that says, if people band together to try to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And I saw the very top of the list was Helper.
Yeah.
And the very bottom of the list was East Carbon,
yep.
Which
same
is
county.
Its direct neighbor.
Yeah.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, we need to really be careful about some of the assumptions that we make. And one of the big takeaways of the whole survey project is that one size does not fit all, and that we have to really watch that we don't overgeneralize to rural, right? There's so many rurals in this state, different rurals, and there are so many different urbans, and there are so many urbanizing and growing, and the experience is not always the same, and that's a perfect example you've just pointed to. But I'll also sometimes point to the Lehigh Saratoga Springs. Now, they're pretty close on this one, but they get very different responses in some ways. They're right next door to each other. We have you guys here, and we also have data from Bountiful, and I have not done those comparisons. Some things will look similar, some things will be different, and you're right next door. So it's an important distinction. Every city is unique.
Any further
Thank
questions?
You. This stuff thrills me, and it's so impactful to what we've already done in making sense of why things have felt successful and also helping us make decisions moving forward. I have a question about, as you've started to do this survey in other cities over time, have you seen change scores occurring when actions are taken by the city council or by administration? Like, this is the data that we got, then they implemented a program, and now look at these numbers have changed?
We have seen that, yes. So we've seen a couple of things. So North Salt Lake did surveys early on, and they were really surprised to see physical health in that red zone. And they were like, physical health, is that really our mandate as a city? What do we do about that? But they moved forward. They wanted to try to do something about that. They were troubled by those lower ratings. And so they started to explore, and they became one of the first cities designated as a healthy city, that's really trying to make an effort for that Get Healthy Utah. And lo and behold, within 2 years, they've moved right out of that red zone and right up into the green zone with physical health. So, and there are other examples like that. I don't have all of them on my tip of my tongue, but that's definitely one. Other cities have said it's really helped them make some of their physical decisions and some of their planning decisions, not because it's the only source of data, right? But it's another target point that they can triangulate with other pieces, and they can help put some things together. The one thing we did see over time was the effect of COVID, right? So we had surveys, cities that had done surveys in early 2020, not knowing what was coming. We were done at the end of February that year. And then literally a couple weeks later, we ended up with COVID. And then those cities wanted to know, in the midst of it all, we did surveys in 2021 because they wanted to get a handle on how things people were doing. And that was striking because some cities really tremendous impacts, and others, Vineyard, what COVID, what pandemic, really low change, low effect. So that really affect, and then we've seen the bounce back for some cities and not for others. So they've used, COVID was the big event, but sometimes the event is local, right? It's a big development, it's maybe a new store that comes into town that changes people's access to things. And so it can be useful. I would never want you to use it as the only source of data, but I think it can be enlightening for you.
That's so exciting. What was that city that had the lower ranking in physical health?
North Salt Lake. No, not North Salt Lake. That's you. North Logan.
North Logan.
So,
thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. That's really exciting.
Yeah, North Logan. My apologies. North something.
This is so fascinating and intriguing, and I love it because it does inform us as we make decisions about social policy and so forth. What was the response rate, did you say, on the survey for our city?
So we don't calculate a rate because we're not sampling a certain amount of people. So it's really out of the whole adult population that could answer the survey. But we had 299 responses. We would like to, for a representative survey, we'd love to be over 375 for a city of your size. So okay. We need to be careful about how we take the data, right? But there is a table in the report that shows you, compares our respondents' demographics to what the census tells us is in North Salt Lake. And you can see some places were really close and others were not so close. So we just have to be mindful of that.
One other thing is that you had a list of other interests that people had written comments on.
That's
so I noticed that government was there. Is that the top ranked one in terms of responses
It was probably on top because it had the most responses,
okay.
But not in terms of, you know, what people were saying that could be really mm-hmm. mixed. So I did send the open comments back to you. So pages and pages and pages of
good.
Raw comments. And we just try to clump them in general topical areas
mm-hmm.
without trying to quantify the qualitative, if you will.
Sure.
We're not trying to do counts and things like that.
So we can drill down on your webpage and get into those as well? Or is
not,
it the stuff
not,
that you...
I don't share the open comments publicly. I believe cities should do what they wish to do with those.
Uh-huh.
So all of the other data is on the website. I think Councilwoman Van Langbelt has those data and others. And if you don't have them, she could certainly share them with you, I think, or others. And I can certainly send it to you as well. We want to make sure you have all those raw data. We give them back to you verbatim, like it or not.
Yeah, great.
You bet.
On the Utah Wellbeing Project website for our city's report, it says that we had 605 surveys.
Well, that could be.
Might
could
be a typing
mistake.
Error, but I would love that to be the right answer.
No kidding.
Than the first
well,
one.
And I noticed some of the responses had more than 300. So I wondered
yeah,
if some of
them you're the 605.
Qualified.
My apologies. It's just a mistake in the presentation.
Okay.
South Weber City must have had the.
Well, I was bragging about our response rate. That's why I noted that.
Okay.
Because that.
Thank
that
you so much
wonderful.
For pointing that out. I apologize. So that must have been South Weber City. So, yeah. I think you are right. It was 605. Because you guys worked really hard to get that link out to folks. So yeah. And I did do recall you being vastly more representative across the demographics than other cities of this size. So especially in terms of income and other kinds of key areas. So yes, thank you. Apologies for that.
Doctor, thank you so much for coming down. I can only imagine, you know, you're working with so many cities and to physically be here is very generous of you. Thank you.
Oh, I love this.
In fact, get some food before you leave.
So. We had some salad beforehand, so thank you so much.
Good job.
My question is about a policy angle that you already touched on, which is physical form of community. And you talked about links with the Healthy Places Index. And I guess I don't have a great specific question.
Mm.
But thought I would just give you a general opportunity. If we were to utilize this, let's say for our coming general plan update process, what would you advise? So for example, does it make sense or not to look at the results by those three areas of the city and to try to understand geographically the diversity or what are some of your suggestions if we were to inform policy that relates to place?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. I think just like I had said, no two communities are really alike. Within community, there are lots of variations as well. And so I would encourage you to understand those internal geographies and where they're significant and where they're not. And we've only presented the data for you on those two major overall well-being and community well-being, but we have all the data for all those domains. We could easily you know, look for you on physical health, mental health, anything else, and see if those differences were significant or not and how they look, to help guide you to sort of say, we need to differentiate and provide services in different ways in different places, or this is a citywide issue. There's not a significant difference. So I think that's one of the take-homes, is to really think about your internal geography, but also your internal demographics. Because what's important to an aging population may not be the same that's to families with young children. And so there are data that you now have and that we can dig in further for you to help you tease those things out. The second thing that I would really point out is that you have a lot of data that is collected on a regular basis that you have about the incomes of your residents and all kinds of other demographics. You can get the county's health demographics about what are the statistics in terms of disease and mortality and all these things. And I would just say that the more we look into the relationship between the Healthy Places Index and our well-being survey, some things are really quite comparable. Living standards, the way people rate and report their living standards, really comparable to those median household incomes. Correlates quite well. Other things, uncorrelated completely. So I think the key thing is to be careful that sometimes there's an old adage, what's perceived to be real is real in its consequences. That sometimes perception and this measured objective fact or reality are not necessarily aligned. But people will, well, they'll vote based on those values and perceptions, and they don't even necessarily know what the average mortality rate or income level is in a city. So watch out, I would say, for when you're making decisions, watch the difference between the perceived data and the measured data, and they can combine to tell you a lot, I think. As for, I'm not going to get in the middle of telling you what your policies should be.
You know, I asked Dr. Flint a similar question, and she directed me to the resources tab on the website that is also specific to the domains. So if this area came up as one that is of particular interest in our city, here are some examples of what action we might take.
Yeah, and there's those in physical health, mental health, community connection, environmental quality. Those, there's a lot of resources there. You bet. I've taken up a ton of your time. Thank you so much.
That was very interesting.
All right. And I'm at your disposal. If there's more data analysis that we can do, let me know. I don't currently have any students right now, but I promise I will crunch the numbers as fast as I can.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Have a great evening.
Thanks for your time. This is really valuable for us.
Thank you, everybody. I'm sorry I had my back to you the whole time. Have a good night.
Thank you. Our next item is the discussion of the proposed improvement to the Eagle Village Detention Pond. And turn that over. Can I just try something for a second? In our audience here, raise your hand if you know what we're talking about, the Eaglewood. So there's a few. Okay. That surprises me, but go ahead, Ken.
Great. I'll tell you when we need to. Yeah. So this item is one that we've been working on a long time, all of us together. We did a field trip some time ago. In fact, I think it was last year we did the field trip in the fall, I believe. And this detention pond, for those who don't know it, is part of the Eaglewood Village development, which is just south of Eagle Ridge Drive on the east side of Highway 89. And there are two detention ponds in this development. This particular detention pond that we're going to be talking about has water in it all the time. It looks like a small lake. When the project was first developed, the developer built some facilities that did not last very long, and there were less quality than what we would install if we were to do it over again. I'll say it that way to try to be careful. So as we thought about that as a staff and as a city council, and also knowing that we have limited resources, we've gone through a process where we hired a park design firm to do a plan for us. That plan was a fairly extensive plan, and came back with a cost estimate of over $600,000, which we felt was too much of an investment for this pond. The city staff thought about that for quite some time, and then we all had a work session, a meeting like tonight, but we went out to the pond together to look at the pond. That is the city council and the staff. And we made some decisions standing there on the edge of the pond about areas that we felt could be left alone and areas that needed to be treated and improved so that the pond would have a more beneficial use for the public. Because in its current form, it looks sort of like a vacant, abandoned lot with a hole in it that has water in it. So, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, it's really not in good condition and needs attention. So at that time, while we were having a discussion, I think that David Franson and I threw out a number of maybe $100,000 to $200,000, and the council encouraged us to see what we could do with $100,000, is my recollection of the discussion. So we began to look for a way to get this work done in more or less by hiring a contractor to come out and work with us and with their equipment to make improvements to the site, but not necessarily go through a formal payment to a consultant for a formal plan, a formal bid process, which adds cost. And we've been successful in reaching out to and having this contractor that I'll introduce in a moment has actually expressed interest and more than that has made a proposal to do the work for $75,000. So, and we're appreciative that Casey Moore, who is here with us, and we'll have you come up, Casey, here in a moment, has responded and provided this plan that we'll advance the slides to now. So this is a concept plan, admittedly, a plan that you wouldn't necessarily take out to bid, but this is the proposal that, and a very good proposal made by Casey. I don't know anyone named Corey, it's Casey, of ways to address mostly the southern edge of the pond. And what you don't see on this graphic is that on that southern edge is really the parking lot that contains public parking for this park and private parking for the apartment development. We share that and we share this facility. The city owns this park, but we share the access with a private community. And the parking is to the south, and so it's at the bottom of the graphic. So we felt like it was important to make improvement on that south side. The other sides are steep and not areas where you would want to encourage the public to get into. They are subject to erosion, and they're just really not good places for the public to run around in. So these are the basic improvements and what we asked of Casey when we were out there, and we did take notes in the meeting. There's a pathway. There's access from the parking area. There's improved landscaping. There's a rock retaining wall. And there's a dike that gets people out into the pond where we previously, you'll remember, we have a fishing dock that is in disrepair and needs to be removed. This plan also includes the removal of Phragmites material, which has invaded the pond. And so, anyway, I'll let Casey come up. Casey, if you want to add anything that I maybe didn't mention on your plan, maybe you could walk us through pieces of this plan, how you envision this plan would be done, and maybe a possible timeframe that it may take?
First off, we're here to build a well-being, okay? We're going to bump that right up. But I think you have access with that road coming down that we want it ADA accessible. So the white path you see is kind of a crushed granite, 4 foot wide path, easy to roll on, bike, whatever. And then just to retain the slope, we're going to do boulder rock wall. And then there is a set of stairs that are going to go down, timber frame stairs that we use cedar on, rough cut cedar, and then fill it with crushed gravel, kind of go down any slope. Most of those trees, you know, nothing on that north side is going to be touched. I mean, you see where that path kind of ends, and there's a lower part in that pond where they get down to fish, and a rock dike is going to be the answer. Maintenance-free type stuff. We need to hook on to that irrigation line with the apartments that's there just to get it watered. But, yeah, simple. I think shade trees down at the bottom there, and you do a little, you know, seating area, bench, whatever, off that stairs that we're going to put in, and just make it nice. Get rid of all the garbage in there and have it accessible.
So, Casey, the boulder rock dike, will the theory be there that it's just solid, and when we get the 20-foot increase in water, it'll just submerge and then still be there when the water recedes?
Yeah, and, you know, we'll build that up big enough. You know, you start with the bigger boulders, and then, you know, to a 4-inch, 3-inch, and then on the top, it'll be easy, kind of a crushed granite, crushed road base type thing to walk out on. Yeah. So none of that should wash away.
I think in the original design, no one anticipated that tremendous fluctuation of water. And so obviously the fishing
rock, it won't go.
Yeah. It did some damage to the facility. It also was, I think the first design was well-intentioned, but probably overbuilt, especially the handicap access. This is a much better solution where people can nearly drive to the access point if they have a handicap need and get to the facility. So this will be an ADA compliant facility.
I have a question. Yeah. Is the intention with the dike that people go out there to fish, or is it so they can get in the water like on a paddleboard or a canoe?
Fish.
So we're not intending that people are getting physically in the water. Is that right?
No.
Great.
That's, I mean, but it'll be safe, right? So when you build those, they kind of come up like appearance. So if somebody does fall, they're going to hit the rocks below, right? When it comes up, it's the base is real wide, and then it flattens off. So,
and then just as a safety question, maybe to the city staff, if somebody decided they wanted to get in the water, there are a lot of reasons why they maybe shouldn't, but is one of them the drainage system where the water exits this retention pond could create a drowning hazard?
No, I don't believe the drainage would be a hazard. There are other hazards. Up in the upper right-hand side of this graphic, you see the inflow, and during storms, that's a very dangerous location for people to be. We would encourage and will likely restrict. We'll put some signage that says not to go in the water. That's not going to keep 100% of our residents out of the water, but we'll sign it that way and try to keep people out.
Is there a trail for access all the way around?
No.
Or just along that south
just
side?
Just see that white right there that you can see?
That's the trail.
That's going to end right there, and it's going to end, just give ADA accessibility, because it's real steep. On that east side and that north side, it's, you don't want people over there, so don't give them any access whatsoever.
In fact, when we were out there, we saw kids fishing from, like, the inlet on the east side.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and people might still find their way there, but it's nice that we're directing them
to stay here. I think the east side will probably be accessible. It would be unimproved, but accessible. And I don't know that that's necessarily a dangerous place for people to be, except in a storm, as I mentioned. I believe on the west side and the north side, there is a danger of people getting in there harming the slopes because they're steep and eroding the slopes and falling into the water. And it's just not a good location for people, which probably means teenagers are going to love it. But it's still, this would be the location where we would formally put a path for people to walk.
Yeah, I think it looks like a good plan. I believe the state is still stocking it because we put it on the list years ago. And and since people are still fishing there on a regular basis, I think they're still fishing there.
Yeah, I think they're stocking it twice a year from what I
know. Yeah,
So one last thing from me. We did not put this on the agenda for action because we wanted to bring it to you in a work session, get some feedback from you. And then in our next meeting, we'll put it on for action. It's going to require a little bit of a change in our purchasing policy, which we want to make sure we comply with. And so we'll make some adjustments to account for this process that we've gone through, which I believe is a process we'll want to use more and more, not skirting the bidding process to get competitive bids. But this is an occasion where I believe we're saving a significant amount of money by going directly to a contractor. We have a relationship with Casey Moore. We know him. We know his work. We approached other contractors. Casey is the one that responded. And I think that's a solid process, though my reading of the city's purchasing policy would require us to make some adjustments or maybe add some language to allow for this type of process. So we'll bring that forward as well so that we're not in violation. I want to be sensitive to that, especially to the elected officials' role as custodians of city funds. I don't want to ask you to approve a purchase or enter into a contract that may not be consistent with your adopted purchasing policy. So we'll make that adjustment and bring this back to you in September. And I've shared that schedule with Casey. He believes he can get this work done still if we award in September, still by the end of the year. So, or at least this season before it starts to snow. So that's exciting too.
Yeah, which is a great time to get rid of the Phragmites.
Yeah.
So it'll come back.
Terrific.
Casey, did you think at all of putting in a spiral jetty?
No. Should I have?
We can add this to the public art site.
All right.
And the Tree of Life. Don't forget that.
No, we wanted something that's maintenance free, that, I mean, low budget, easy, and really nice, accessible for everybody to use and enjoy.
It's a big improvement. It looks good.
Well, I'll take a chance. I want to thank Casey for being responsive and appreciate the effort you put into this, Casey, and working with us. And we're looking forward to working with you on this project.
We'd love to do this stuff. So
yeah, thank you.
I just had one question. What's the little dashed line there at the kind of the top that looks like a dashed line? I'm thinking, yeah, kind of in the water, but it's in the green area, so.
Oh,
does that represent anything at all?
No.
Okay.
It just,
all right.
Part of the plan.
Okay.
You know, that's just existing kind of stuff, and it's a little bit shallower right there. You know, where it kind of comes in, and depending on the watermark, you know, that just shows nothing.
But to be clear, Casey, you're not doing any work on the north.
No work
the
at all.
East.
Okay. Right there on that south side.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Looks great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Let's adjourn from the work session and reconvene. It's at 7:00. Thank you.